Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and each week we bring you cutting-edge information to help you to take charge of your own health, to actually be your own doctor, so to speak, and to really eliminate the need for excessive visits to healthcare practitioners or traditional healthcare practitioners, that is, so that you can actually take charge of yourself. And what we do is I like to introduce you to concepts, to topics of national interest, of interest within my own community, and things that I think are on top of the mind awareness. What I find is that most people are really scared when it comes to taking charge of their own health, especially when it comes to their hormones. That kind of like gets a little bit of a scary tinge to it. Thyroid is what the topic of today's call is, and I'm excited to be here. We don't have a guest. It's just little old me, and I want to share with you some facts and things that I've discovered over my 22 years of clinical experience that have helped my clients and patients to take charge of their health, to improve their thyroid health, which relates to and equates to improving their metabolism, getting rid of extra belly fat and extra weight, improving their digestion, improving skin, stopping their hair from falling out. Because all of these symptoms that I just mentioned can be due to a faulty thyroid metabolism. So if you are someone who's been dealing with not quite having enough energy to make it through the day, and you're dealing with things like depression, constipation, overwhelm, you might have a thyroid problem. And if you are one of the millions of people who have already been diagnosed with a thyroid problem, in fact, 300 million people worldwide are thought to suffer from a thyroid gland disorder. If you are one of those millions who have already been diagnosed, who have already been told that you have thyroid problems and you may even be on thyroid medication, we have some good news for you. Now, one thing I want to make sure that you're aware, everything that I'm sharing is not intended to replace your medical doctor's opinions, your medical doctor's approach to your case. It's not medical advice. I'm just sharing some information that I've gathered over my many years, many decades of research, and also in working with thousands of clients, and knowing what works and what doesn't, and being willing to dig and help each person to find what works for them. So let's kind of jump right in, and let's talk a little bit about the thyroid and what it is, because you may not even be aware of exactly what it is, even if you're on thyroid medication and even if you have a thyroid problem. So thyroid is a little gland that sits in your neck, and it's got, it looks like a butterfly. And the thyroid controls your metabolic rate. It produces some hormones. The main ones that it produces are T4 and T3. T3 is to a lesser extent, a much lesser extent. In fact, it's believed that 90% of the hormone produced by the thyroid is what's called T4. And a lot of people go around talking about that. Well, I'm on T4 medication, but they don't really know or understand what that means. So let me give you a little idea. There's an amino acid called tyrosine. That, my friends, is the T in the thyroid hormone. So you've got the thyroid hormone in the middle, and you've got tyrosine, and it's surrounded by a number of iodines. T4 is surrounded by 4 iodines. T3 is surrounded by 3 iodines. And there even is such a thing as T2 and T1, and guess what? They're surrounded by either 2 or 1 iodine. So that's basically the story there. So a lot of people, and in the early days of functional medicine approaches to thyroid, it's, well, the thyroid needs tyrosine and iodine. And if somebody's having a thyroid problem, maybe instead of giving them T4 or T3, we just give them more tyrosine and iodine and help them to make more. And that may work, but it may not work because the problem may not be in the thyroid's ability to make the hormone or in even the raw materials that are missing. It could be some problems with the enzymes that actually put the tyrosine and iodine together. It could be that there's an autoimmune process going on, and it's actually attacking the body's ability, the tyrosine and iodine together, to make thyroid hormone. Or your thyroid problems and your thyroid symptoms may not have anything to do directly with the thyroid at all. And when I say that to people, they get kind of quizzical, like, what do you mean by that? What I mean by that is sometimes the thyroid's making just plenty, just the right amount of T4, and it's not being converted to T3. So you see, the thyroid gland will make mostly T4, a little bit of T3. But T3 is what your cells need to up their metabolic rate. T3 receptors, which are little like protein kind of fat little indentations, if you will, on a cell where the thyroid goes and goes, oh, I belong there, and it attaches on, and then it stimulates the cell to increase its metabolic rate. Well, the problem might be that your body is not converting the T4 to T3 adequately, which happens in the peripheral part of the body. It happens in either the gut or the liver and in some other places, but the main amounts are in the gut and liver. Approximately 75% in the liver, 25% in the gut, maybe slightly less than that, and then a few little percentages in other places like kidneys and skin, etc. So here's the deal. If you're not converting T4 to T3, which is what your cells need, right, which what those receptors are looking for, then you're not going to have the energy that you would if you had the right amount of T3. And your body is going to go into thyroid imbalance symptoms. And basically, that's like the slowing down of everything. So what happens if your gut slows down? Well, you may get constipation. You may get leaky gut because the gut can't repair itself quickly enough or eliminate toxins quickly enough. You may get toxic buildup because your liver can't detoxify quickly enough. It doesn't have the right metabolic rate. Okay? You may have skin issues, dry and flaky and coarse skin, because the skin cells can't turn over and reproduce themselves quickly enough. Right? You may have hair that falls out because the hair follicles aren't getting the energy that they need to continue to grow hair, or your hair may get thinner. You may get depressed. That's a sluggishness of your mental function. So there's a lot of things that can happen when you're not getting enough thyroid, but it may not be your thyroid. You see, if you can't convert T4 to T3, and that's a common problem, and I see it a lot, and it's a problem that most doctors miss. If you can't convert T4 into T3, the problem is probably not in your thyroid. The problem is probably in the periphery. The problem could be that your gut is leaky, damaged, inflamed. You've got an overgrowth of candida or parasites or other things. It could be that your liver is sluggish, that maybe you're drinking too much alcohol and caffeine and it's causing your liver to have to go on overdrive. Or maybe you work in a toxic environment. Or maybe you have some genetic imbalances that cause your liver to be more sluggish and it can't convert. The other thing that can prevent the T4 from converting into T3 is deficiency of a mineral called selenium. And selenium is a very important mineral, and that mineral, it's in addition to it being important for helping your body with antioxidant support, it's also important for conversion of T4 to T3. So if you don't have enough selenium, there's a problem. So I'm giving you some background on how this works and what some of the imbalances that can be happening with your thyroid are, so that when I start to talk about the foods and the nutrition that you can use to start to support your thyroid better, it's all going to make sense. So that's my reason, my rationale. I always feel that when I describe how things work, people are much more willing or able to think about, well, how can I fix them if they're not working well, and to really stick with it because they understand. Okay, so that's my rationale there. Okay, so next, before we get into the specifics of food, I want to talk to you a little bit about the kind of things, other things that can go wrong with your thyroid. So we talked about not converting T4 to T3, and that's not really a problem in the thyroid itself. You may have perfectly normal thyroid function. The other problem that can happen is that the receptors on the cells get inflamed or burned out, and they're not able to readily accept the T3 and allow it to stimulate the metabolism. Well, how the heck does that happen? Well, there's a number of ways. One way is a very common way that most of us deal with throughout our lives, and that is, guess what? That is, are you ready? It's going to be a really hard one to understand. Maybe something you don't relate to. You ready? Stress. You go, oh, stress, yes, I have a little bit of that in my life. Yes, you do. Probably we all do. But we all have a lot of that stress in our life just because we live in the world we live in. It's a modern world. We're stressed constantly, not just by mental, emotional things like pressures to get things done and financial things and worries about our kids being safe, but we're all surrounded by electromagnetic waves. I mean, I'm standing here in this field of electromagnetic currency. That's a stress on my body, right? The wireless on the laptop, there's the phone, there's all the electronics in the house. And we live in a modern world, and I'm not saying that that's bad, but it comes with a price, and that can put stress on our systems. In addition, the food supply is a bit different than it was back in the olden days when people grew their food or traded food that they grew with their neighbors who grew something different. And we have a lot of pesticides added to the foods to make them grow better. We've got genetically modified organisms added to the seeds as they're growing or having the seeds treated with. And so they become pesticide resistant, and so that they won't, the plants won't get destroyed by all the pesticides, so they can put a whole lot more pesticides on them so that they can kill off the pesticides, make a lot more money, and we have to breathe those, eat those in. Okay. There's problems in the water supplies. We're seeing fish that are losing their reproduction abilities and growing with two heads because the waters are tainted. Right? So there's all these environmental factors, the things from factories, the air, the ozone layer being thinned and not having the protection. So there's a lot of factors that lead to stress. So would you say that majority of people have some stress in their life? Yeah. And that can affect not only the conversion of T4 to T3, but it affects the receptors on the cells, can damage them. The other things that can affect those receptors, deficiency of vitamin A. Deficiency of vitamin A. And a lot of people aren't getting enough of the vitamin A in their diet, or they're eating beta-carotene-rich foods, but they're not converting them properly because their guts are not working properly, or because they have a genetic disorder that doesn't allow that effective conversion. So vitamin A deficiency can be a problem, leading to receptors not working properly. And lastly, of the major ones, there's an enzyme called homocysteine, or compound, an amino acid byproduct. And homocysteine is an intermediate metabolite, intermediate chemical from the processing of your methylation pathways. And if you don't have enough vitamin B6, B12, or folic acid, folate, you build up this homocysteine. It doesn't get converted to what it's supposed to get converted downstream from there. And I'm trying to simplify the complex biochemistry so that you understand. But a buildup of homocysteine can latch onto those thyroid receptors and decrease the metabolic rate. And it also contributes to cardiac disease, heart disease. It's one of the markers that are looked at. So you see there's a lot of factors that can affect the thyroid that isn't really just related to my thyroid doesn't work properly. The last one I want to talk about is autoimmune disease. A very common autoimmune disease called Hashimoto's affects the thyroid and causes the body to attack the thyroid in several different ways. And that can be measured. It's not part of a routine blood test for thyroid problems, which is unfortunate. And even when doctors do test for it, they don't usually know how to treat it differently than just an underfunctioning thyroid. And unfortunately, when they treat a Hashimoto's, a thyroiditis, autoimmune thyroiditis, as if it's just the thyroid's not producing enough thyroid hormone, people can get into lots of trouble. And that's very often overlooked. In fact, it's believed that about 90% of people with low-functioning thyroid actually have Hashimoto's. That's a huge percentage, but a lot of it goes undiagnosed. Now, the problem is that when you treat Hashimoto's as if it's a thyroid disease, you miss the root cause because Hashimoto's is an immune dysfunction. It's an immune system gone awry that starts to attack its own body tissues. And quite frankly, what I've seen in my 20-some years of clinical practice is that autoimmune diseases go in pairs and triplets and even quadruples, meaning usually when somebody has one autoimmune disease, there are others either in process, or in progress, or at risk for. And there are ways that you can test it, which we'll go into a lot more detail on an upcoming teleseminar webinar that I'm going to be doing actually next week, a week from tomorrow, I believe, where we're going to go into a lot more detail about some of these things. I'm giving you a broad overview here today because I want to really focus today on the food, and we can focus more on some of the labs and some of the mechanisms there. So autoimmune. So you have to treat the immune system. We can't just give the person extra thyroid hormone. The typical approach to autoimmune thyroid conditions is just give the person T4. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. It just gets worse and worse. And doctors will admit, well, Hashimoto's is not a curable disease. Well, I don't ever say anything's a curable disease, but I will tell you in my years of experience, I've seen a lot of people through appropriate diet, lifestyle, supplementation, interventions, have reduced or eliminated their thyroid antibodies completely after having been on medication for decades. So it is basically, you can get it into remission. And one of my mentors would always say, no, Hashimoto's is not curable. I said, but you just told us all these cases where you got people out of it. He goes, yeah, but it's not curable because if they go back and do the same habits again, it's going to come back. Right? Whereas if you have a cure, you know, like say, I don't know, like say you have a streptococcal infection and you take an antibiotic, you're not going to just go back into your life and automatically catch another strep infection. You cured it pretty much for that time. You may get exposed to it again, but you pretty much cured it. Not that way with an autoimmune disease. You need to be updating your diet and lifestyle habits and your supplementation and your antioxidants and your gut health and all that. And then as long as you maintain that, as long as you don't go back to the old habits, you can keep it. But if you go back to the old habit, it's going to come back. And there are genetic components that predispose people to this as well. So that's basically in a nutshell of the kinds of things that might go wrong with your thyroid. And I really want to focus on some foods that you can use to help support your thyroid. So I'm going to go through some of those. You'll understand in a moment why I gave you some of the background, because the way that some of these different foods work is related to which of the imbalances you have. So if your body is just not making enough thyroid hormone because you don't have enough of the precursors, there's a couple of ways that you can get those precursors. One is you can get iodine from eating sea vegetables. The sea vegetables are an abundantly rich source, especially kelp. And my favorite form of kelp is something called Laminaria digitata. That's Laminaria digitata. And the reason is there were some Japanese studies probably about 5 years ago where they discovered that a good percentage of the iodine, maybe up to 10%, that's in the sea vegetable, in the Laminaria, actually is preformed T3 and T4. That there's tyrosine in there, the amino acid tyrosine, that binds to the iodine right there in the seaweed. And that when you take it in, it's like supplementing. It's only 10%, so you're not going to run the risk of overactivating your thyroid or risk of symptoms of overthyroid unless you just go really crazy overboard on seaweed. But seaweed's one of those things that you don't hear people binging on all that much. You don't hear people say, just like they say with a loaf of bread or a box of Oreo cookies, oh, God, I took one piece and I couldn't resist, ate the whole thing. You eat a little bit of sea vegetables, you put a little on your salads and stuff, and you generally get enough. It's not something that you commonly would overdose on. So sea vegetables are a good addition to your diet. Besides the iodine, they're loaded with other minerals, and other minerals that are important to the thyroid are things like magnesium and zinc and iron and selenium. And sea vegetables, I'm not sure that they're such a great source of selenium, but I'll talk to you about a food that is in a moment. So sea vegetables are great things to add. As far as making sure you have enough tyrosine as the raw material, it's the same as making sure you have all the other nutrients intact, all the other amino acids intact, is making sure that you're getting enough protein and you're digesting enough protein. So it's important to have good stomach acid and that you chew and then you eat under a relaxed environment. So those are some ways that you can feed the thyroid if it's low on the raw materials. You can also take tyrosine supplements, but it's not, I don't that often recommend tyrosine supplements when they're specifically or just a thyroid issue, but tyrosine supplements can be helpful in conjunction with some other things in people who have low dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter, and low dopamine can lead to feelings of depression, lack of motivation, things like that. So it's really a clinical judgment on the part of a practitioner and a functional medicine practitioner, which is what I am. So that's a piece of it. What else do you need for thyroid health? Well, remember we talked about converting from T4 to T3. One of the most important foods for that is a little nut called the Brazil nut. And the Brazil nut, one Brazil nut has the RDA's worth of selenium in it. When someone has a problem with their T4 to T3 conversion, I usually recommend between 2 and 4 Brazil nuts every day. And that's because it's somewhere between 200 and 400 micrograms that have been shown in many studies to help reverse this issue. Also works well in conditions where somebody has those antibodies. So Brazil nuts are a good addition. Green leafy vegetables are a good addition in general because they provide lots of antioxidants, they provide lots of minerals, they provide lots of magnesium. And magnesium is another very important nutrient, and zinc nutrient for the thyroid. Okay? So those are really important foods that you want to make sure that you do. One of the other things that people I find, and I really need to interject this right here, is that if you're on any medications and you've got a thyroid problem, it's possible that those medications are contributing to your thyroid problem. So there's a list of them, and I'm going to give you a link where you can go to download a presentation that I did that has this list, and it's thyroidresources.com. And if you're listening on the Blog Talk page, you can go ahead and click on the link that says you can get our presentation. And it's basically a audio and a video presentation with slides. And then there's a set of slides that you can download as a PDF and take notes on, and has some checklists and things in there. But it also, there's a thing where there's a video of me making food related to the thyroid, so making some things that have sea vegetables and selenium-containing foods, etc. So that's available to you at thyroidresources.com. So this is a list, and in that presentation you'll have a list of the medications, which is what made me think of it. List of medications, and I'll just read some of the more common ones, but I have a list of like 20 different medications. So if you're on any of these medications, you want to be talking to your doctor about your thyroid health. Antibiotics, antidepressants, diabetes medications like metformin, things like that, hypertension medications, pain medications, antacids, cholesterol-lowering medications, growth hormone medications, anti-nausea, diuretics, amphetamines, Adderall can affect your thyroid. That's used usually for cases with kids that don't have focus, but it's also used a lot for people with fatigue because it's an upper. What else? Arrhythmia medications, anti-addiction drugs, arrhythmia, psychoactive medications like lithium or Thorazine. So if you're on any of these medications, make a note to have a discussion with your doctor to make sure he or she does a thorough evaluation of your thyroid gland. All right, so let's walk. There's a whole bunch of stuff about thyroid lab analysis in that presentation, and I'm also going to be doing a live presentation that will incorporate thyroid lab analysis in a week. So what else? So gluten is an important food to avoid if you have a thyroid problem, and that's for a number of reasons. Gluten, it can create an inflammatory response in your body. Gluten can aggravate the lining of your gut and create a leaky gut situation. Gluten can create, if you have gluten antibodies in your body, those can cross-react with the thyroid. Well, what does that mean, cross-react? Well, that means that your body produces an antibody, which is these little Pac-Man kind of gobblers that your immune system produces to get rid of foreign invaders. It goes to attack the gluten, and, well, the gluten just happens to be floating by the thyroid at the time. That's called the drive-by shooting approach or theory. Or then there's the molecular mimicry approach or theory, which is that the antibody that the body produces for the gluten is some similarities to those for the thyroid gland, and the body attacks it. We think that both of those mechanisms are happening. So I recommend that you stay off of gluten. In fact, I take it to the extreme of if I'm working with someone and they have a thyroid issue and they are unwilling to go off of gluten, I won't work with them. I'll tell them to find another doctor because my stuff works if you work it. And if you don't get off of gluten, I don't believe that it's rare that your thyroid will be able to heal. So I just won't take somebody on. It's not saying that if you're struggling with getting off of gluten and you've been trying for a long time to get off of gluten and you need support to get off of gluten, I will help you there. But if somebody says, no, I don't believe it, what else do you got for me? I'll say, you know what, I think you should find another doctor. I didn't used to do that, but I found that it's frustrating and not fair for the person I'm working with. So gluten is a must. If you have any kind of thyroid issues, especially autoimmune, you've got to get off of it. So let's see. What other foods? So let's talk about a thyroid nourishing diet. We talked about green leafy vegetables, the green leafy vegetables and the sea vegetables, super important sources of nutrients and minerals that the thyroid needs, especially the iodine. There's also omega-3 fats are super, super important. There's two categories of fats, fatty acids that your body cannot produce. You have to take in omega-3 and omega-6. Omega-6 is abundant, super abundant, and maybe even overabundant in the diet. Omega-3 is harder to find. So what we find is a lot of people have too much omega-6 and not enough omega-3, which leads to an overproduction of inflammatory molecules. And what that does, those inflammatory molecules can create wreak havoc in all of your glands and organs, and especially the thyroid. So that's an important one. So what else? When you're eating fruits, you want to stick with the low glycemic fruits, especially if you have a known blood sugar imbalance problem. I find that there's an intimate connection between thyroid health and blood sugar. And when I get people to maintain and manage their blood sugars, their thyroid problems often melt away. So it's really important to stick with, you don't have a diet that's loaded with bananas and mangoes, that you stick with more of the berries, maybe some kiwi, things that are lower glycemic, green apple. Sea vegetables we talked about, but I mentioned just kelp, but there's others, and they really can be fun to eat and fun to crinkle up on your salads. I, in fact, the other day made this wonderful salad where I just took some dolph, which is a purple seaweed, and I soaked it, and I rinsed it a little bit just to soften it a little bit. I put it in a bowl, and I put on it a little bit of avocado oil, and I put on it, there's this bottle of stuff called Parma, which is like fake Parmesan cheese. It's Parmesan cheese that's good for you, that's made with hemp seeds and walnuts and nutritional yeast and spices. This one happened to be chipotle cayenne. And I sprinkled that over the dulse with the avocado oil, and that was it. I could have sliced on some avocado on it. I could have put in some shredded carrot, but I was in a hurry. I wanted a meal that I could make like that, and I did, and it was delicious. And I got tons of great nutrition from my sea vegetables. And sea vegetables aren't something you have to eat every single day. You just eat a substantial quantity, 2, 3, 4 times a week, however often it works for you. My recommendation is just for maintenance, somewhere around 1 ounce a week. But if you've got a problem with your thyroid, then I would say 1.5 to 2. The only issues you want to make sure of is if you have Hashimoto's, an autoimmune thyroid, that you get your iodine levels checked and don't take too much iodine, because excess iodine has been said to contribute to Hashimoto's as well. So just be careful about that. There's a really cool test, and we'll talk more about testing when we do this call next week, the webinar that I'm planning to do for next week. I really want to get this information out there because there's so many people suffering. So what else is good food? Garlic and onions, the sulfur compounds in there, can be really helpful for your thyroid. So sprinkle some garlic powder and onion powder or some fresh onto your various salads and dishes. There are omega-3 fats. Think a lot of people think about fish oil, and yeah, fish oil is a source of omega-3 fats. But I always ask the question, where did the fish get the omega-3s? And the answer is the algae that they eat. So I'd rather eat the algae. So there's blue-green algae, there's the brown algaes, there's different kinds of algaes. And those are good sources of omega-3 fats. There's also a wild edible called purslane, and it has kind of a citrusy taste, very, very good. And that's another way to get some of the omega-3s. It's one of the few plant sources of preformed EPA other than algae. And EPA is eicosapentaenoic acid, and it's basically a long-chain omega-3 fat that's really important for inflammation in your body. What else? Yeah, so probiotics are super, super important for thyroid health. Why? Because the thyroid is so connected to the gut. And you may say, well, I've never heard of that before. How is the thyroid connected with the gut? Well, it's a two-way street, and it's a vicious cycle. If your thyroid is sluggish, your gut is going to get impaired, and it's going to be sluggish, and it's not going to repair itself as well, so you'll get inflammation, which will cause more digestive woes. And if your digestion is messed up from other things, like you've been eating gluten for a long time and it's inflamed, it's allowing things to penetrate through the pores, the little holes and openings in the intestine into your bloodstream and wreak havoc. And a lot of times that affects the organs and causes an autoimmune condition. So that's where that is. Let's see. So the other thing that's super important for thyroid health is that you eliminate things like caffeine and alcohol and sugar and all those refined foods. For the sugar and refined foods, in addition to the up and down and up and down and all around, it's of the sugars, you're stripping the body of B vitamins and chromium when you take in a lot of those refined foods and sugars. And we'll go into more of that in part 3 of the 3-part webinar series that I'm going to be talking about in the next coming weeks. So, what else? We mentioned some nutrients. There's a bunch of other nutrients. One of my favorite ways to get people started on feeding and nutrients for their thyroid is with an elixir. And I'll have them do an elixir. Many of you have heard me speak about my elixirs before or heard others speak about their experience with the elixirs. Most people get amazing results when they do these elixirs. And we basically take a tea base, you know, an herbal tea base. It could be green tea, licorice tea, gynostemma tea, tulsi tea, any kind of teas that are just really good and grounding for the body. And you take that and you add something fat. You know, I like to do a good omega-3 rich kind of fat like hemp seeds and coconut, things like that. And then we put several teaspoons of specific herbs. And some of the herbs that are best for the thyroid are like ashwagandha. Ashwagandha is super good for the thyroid. It actually helps the thyroid to create more T3, T4. So that's a really good one to do. There's other ones. There's tulsi. There's some of the medicinal mushrooms that are really good for thyroid support, like reishi. So I put herbs in there, and the recipe for this is in the presentation that you can find at thyroidresources.com, thyroidresources.com. And we put all that stuff in the blender, and we blend, and then you can add whatever flavorings you want, vanilla, cacao, peppermint, butterscotch. I love buying these little tincture-like bottles that are extracts, flavor extracts. And there's chocolate and coconut and cinnamon and butterscotch and English toffee. I mean, they're just all quite yummy. And you add that to it, and then if you want something sweet added to it, if you're watching your sugars, which I recommend if you're doing it for thyroid, you can put a low-glycemic sweetener like a little bit of stevia in there or a flavored stevia or Lakanto or some of the other monk fruit, things like that. And you blend, and it's really easy to do, and they taste good. And I finally got my husband to start taking them, which is kind of fun. He's been kind of fighting me as we go along, but I figured out one that he likes. So a lot of people like them. A lot of people love them. And for some, they do it and it doesn't quite agree. And you have to play with it to figure out which of the herbs are the best ones for you. Because everything's personalized. There's no one-size-fits-all when it comes to food and nutrients. So let's see. We mentioned the nutrients. We mentioned the herbs. I think we've mentioned most of the stuff related to food and nutrients. There's a lot of other things that you can do for your thyroid, but that relates to environments and exposures and stress. But for now, I think what I want to do is open it up and find out from Lynn if she has any questions that she hears, because she speaks to a lot of our clients and a lot of our coaching clients, to find out what's going on with that. So Lynn, take it away. If you've got questions you want to rip out by me, if you've got questions other people have asked, if there's questions that have been submitted, go for it. I'm open.
Well, I know one question people frequently ask, and you have in previous venues mentioned this, but I think it's still a good point to bring up, is the brassica families. So many times people say, I have a thyroid problem, I cannot eat broccoli or any of the brassicas. And so I think it would be good for you to address that in your wonderful manner here.
Yes, thank you. That is a question that comes up all the time. I would say that any call I'm ever on, any live event I'm ever doing where I speak about thyroid, that question comes up. It just comes up all the time. Because I think there's a lot of misinformation around it. It is true that the brassica family, which would be broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, kohlrabi, Brussels sprouts, those kinds of things, they have a set of compounds called sulforaphanes. And those sulforaphanes are extremely helpful for the body. They help to prevent cancer. They help with detoxification. It's extremely helpful. But there's precursors to sulforaphanes called isothiocyanates. And isothiocyanate gets produced, it's in the brassica family, and in the body, if your body cannot convert that to those sulforaphanes, you might be missing an enzyme called myrosinase that would help that. So you cannot do that, then you're going to have a problem with that isothiocyanate building up. So in some people, eating raw brassicas before they're cooked will have an effect on the thyroid. But when I've done the research, it's very few and far between. It's not everybody, because you have to have the right environment. You have to be deficient in that enzyme. Oftentimes it's because your detox mechanisms are sluggish. But I'm going to share with you a couple of stories that I like to tell people just to kind of put their mind at ease. First of all, that the isothiocyanate is destroyed mostly by cooking. Not 100%, but mostly by cooking. So you can take the brassicas and lightly steam them and not have the same effect. Number two, when they took isothiocyanate, they isolated it and they fed it to rats, they induced thyroid, low thyroid symptoms. When they then went and they put the isothiocyanate with iodine, guess what? They didn't get the same response. They didn't destroy the thyroid. So I always tell people, whenever you're using raw brassicas, whether it's, you know, kale in a smoothie or a kale salad or raw broccoli in some way, that you include a rich source of iodine with it. That's pretty easy to do. You can sprinkle some kelp over it. You can eat a couple of pieces of kelp. You can crumple kelp up in your salad, or you can make a really amazing sea vegetable salad. So that's my deal on the brassicas. I've said this story so many times, maybe I missed something. Oh, yeah, one other story I wanted to tell. So they took humans. And broccoli sprouts tend to have the most concentrated source of this compound. So they took these group of people, they measured their thyroid function at the beginning, and then they fed them the equivalent of 3 packages of broccoli sprouts every day, which is a fair amount of broccoli sprouts. And at the end of 3 to 4 weeks, I believe it was, all of them, except for one, had a teeny tiny increase in their TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone. And it was just teeny tiny. And it normalized very quickly. So it was just too much for that person. So it's a matter of finding what's the right amount, what's the right form, and do you tolerate it? But in a healthy person, I don't believe that any amount of brassicas that we could humanly get down our bodies is going to hurt the thyroid. Yes, if we isolate the isothiocyanate, it could be a problem. You're welcome. Any other questions?
We do have one hand up, but before we open that up, I thought I would give the general directions. If you are already on the phone and you would like to ask Dr. Rita-Marie a question, press 1 on your telephone keypad, and that raises your hand and will note to open up your line. If you're on the web and you're on the chat, type your question in there, and I will make sure it is asked online.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you, Lynn.
And so we have
open up the line.
Welcome. Okay.
Oh. 802 area
your
code. Hello.
Sarah Grace.
Right. Hi, Sarah. Hi, Sarah Grace.
Hi. And, I'm so grateful for these calls. I want to know how much, if you're a vegan, how much is enough protein? What are the best sources? And I don't do any grains or beans. I have Hashimoto's, but I also have a lot of gut issues. And this is a very helpful call. But I do want to know. I've already asked
it's a great question. It's a great question. And by the way, I don't do any grains or beans either, and I'm vegan. And I've experimented over the years, and it's going to vary from time to time. It could vary in a female cyclically throughout the month. You may need more at certain points of time and less at other points in time. It's going to vary based on how athletic you are, how much exercise you're doing, how many weights you're lifting. It's going to vary based on any kind of injuries and traumas. You're going to need more for repair. So just know that there's ballpark. So some of the numbers I've seen are 80% of your lean muscle mass. So, for example, that's a harder thing to calculate. So if you weigh 120 pounds, let's just say, and you do a fat test and you turn out you're 20% fat, let's just say you weigh 100 pounds, to make it easy on everybody. You weigh 100 pounds, and you're 20% fat. You do one of those scales or one of those things you determine. So 80% lean muscle mass. So 80% of 100 is 80, right? So you have 80 pounds of lean muscle mass, and you want to take 80% of that, and that would be a kind of a ballpark. But it could go up to higher and it could go lower. It just depends on your lifestyle and activity level. So, for example, 80% of 80 would be what? 10 to 16 would be about somewhere in the 60s. Okay? And that's on the high end. Okay? So I heard Dr. Pizzorno, who wrote the Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine, speak, and he said, you know, he estimates for most women, an average woman of, say, 120 pounds, probably needs somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 45 to 60 grams of protein a day. Now, what does that calculate to in terms of food? It depends on what you're eating. So you're not eating beans or grains, but you're eating nuts or seeds. Are you eating those?
Yes.
Okay, and are you eating green leafy vegetables?
Trying.
Okay, so green leafies.
A lot of green leafies, and I eat a lot of, I love the sea vegetables. I eat a lot of sea vegetables, and I eat a lot of green leafies. I love them. I couldn't live without them.
Okay, great. Great. So what you can do is you can go online. There are several sites that do this. One of them that I know of off the top of my head is fitday.com. And you can just type in all the foods you've eaten over the course of the day and just get a sense. You know, make it an average day, right? And then get a sense of how much protein you're getting in. If you feel like, you know, you're under a lot of stress, you've had some traumas, you're doing excessive exercise, et cetera, you may want to supplement with a good solid protein powder. So something like Sun Warrior, which has Warrior Food, which is nice blend of protein. There's now so many good ones, Health Force Nutritionals, Purium, so many of them. And I just say find the one that you resonate the most with, or find several that you resonate the most with and change them up. So it's just like, okay, I'm on the run. I'm not really eating as much protein as I could or should. I'm going to get some extra. Do we have to use protein powders? No. And in my Vital community, that's vitalhealthcommunity.com, we have some presentations in there that share a little bit more about that. And I have a whole presentation on protein powders, when you need them, when you don't. You know, how do you know? So does that answer your question?
Well, somewhat. I mean, I can't really go into details, obviously, but I guess I'm curious to know what sources you use of protein. I don't quite, other than nuts and seeds. I mean, are nuts and seeds enough protein? I mean, is that an
greens? Here's the deal. Greens are a super amount of protein. So there are days when I don't even have hardly any nuts or seeds, but I'm doing, like, tons of green smoothies and green juices and salads and stuff. When I calculated up how much protein was in one of my 32-ounce smoothies, which I usually drink at least one, if not two, in a day, I was coming up with something like 25 grams of protein just in my smoothie. Okay?
Well, you
add some nuts and seeds,
green.
Hemp seeds. Hmm? What do I put in my smoothie?
I know what we don't really have to worry that much about protein, but I am trying to build up my strength because I do have a lot of health issues, but I don't want to overtax my body. I want it to be able to digest what I put in it,
Absolutely.
I don't want to go too heavy.
Absolutely, yeah. So the things that the way I get my protein is greens, hemp seeds, various chia seeds, the broccoli. I'll steam up a big pot of broccoli and other things, so I don't do everything raw. I'll do some of it that way, especially in the winter, and I'll blend that up, so I get a lot of broccoli, has a lot of protein in it. So that's basically how I get my protein. And then I don't every day, but I periodically will add some of the protein powder. I'll just get a sense of whether I feel like I need it. But if you're in a state of repair, it's probably a good idea, especially if you have gut stuff going on. Because if you've got any stomach acid problems, you're not going to be absorbing your protein very well.
Yeah, major, major. Okay,
yeah.
So protein powder
I'll go
is
for
more
protein
absorbable.
Powder.
It's more
What's
absorbable.
That? Yes, the protein
powder
powders are going to be, they're
absorbable.
Hydrolyzed.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, they're more absorbable. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you, thank you.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. Okay. All right. So, Lynn just came on again. So let's see if Lynn, if there's other questions that are coming in or if you have other questions.
I don't. Although I have a comment, I use spirulina a lot as my source of protein. And so I thought, well, I'd ask you your opinion of that.
Absolutely. I forgot to mention that. It just goes without, yes. Spirulina is a super source of protein. And one of my favorite protein powders is one from Health Force Nutritionals called the Elite Green Protein. And it's all green. It doesn't have rice protein concentrate or hemp protein or pea protein or anything. It's basically all green. And it's pretty phenomenal. And a large percentage of it is spirulina, but a lot of other those green powders, chlorella spirulina. Very good sources of protein. And if you were to make some sort of a smoothie or a shake and you put spirulina in with hemp seeds, in with your greens, you're going to have an amazingly abundant source of protein. And you have to make sure that you're chewing it well and that you're eating without a lot of stress. And it's a good idea to have something bitter before you eat because it stimulates your digestive juices.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons I use it because...
Yep.
Sometimes if I am under stress, then I know my stomach acid probably won't be the best, and I want to make sure I absorb my protein and all the other nutrients, and that's a form that's more absorbable. And like you said at the beginning, our digestion is the foundational piece to this domino effect that goes all the way up to our thyroid and beyond. And
yep.
And so that's really good stuff.
Very good stuff.
I don't have any other questions from here, but I did want to point out, as you did before, that both in the blog and on the Blog Talk Radio, we do have the links to the thyroid solution free resources that have the videos, and it has some recipe samples. And your blog also is a really good source of different recipes. We have some really, there's an Aramaic carrot salad recipe that you have that's wonderful.
That one.
Yeah, and most people are not familiar with Aramaic, and at first glance it kind of looks not so appetizing, but it's also one of the most mild and actually a little bit sweet tasting of the sea vegetables. And so I really encourage people to explore that, especially as I get older and my body changes. I find that I don't eat as many nuts especially. I eat more seeds, but not as many nuts. And so including things like sea vegetables has been really beneficial to my diet. I just eat dulse, mm-hmm. like a snack.
Right out of the bag, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, it's funny you say that, because that's what I was going to do the other day. And I picked up the bag, and it was a little bit like maybe the bag had been open a little bit, so it was just not quite as soft and pliable as it normally is. That's why I soaked it for just like 30 seconds. I just rinsed it with water, and then I put it in a bowl and made my salad, and it was yummy.
Yeah, as you were describing that, and I'd never had avocado oil until I was at your house, and that is amazing stuff. That's another thing I encourage people to investigate is avocado oil. That just lends a taste and almost a texture that... it's very delightful to the palate.
Yes, indeed. And I just had the thought of doing that dulse salad and putting a couple of dollops of sauerkraut on it, mixing it up. So avocado slices and then sauerkraut mixed in with the dulse. I'm getting hungry. I think I'm going to make some of that.
I know.
Awesome.
That's right.
Good stuff. So it's great stuff. Just again, thyroidresources.com is a free download. Just go in there, put your name and email, and we'll email you the links. That'll actually get you into our membership site. And there's a couple of other little free goodies when you get in there that you'll see that are kind of nice. The Vital Health Community is our community where once a month we have an In the Kitchen segment of the show, and as a member you then get the video recording downloadable and you get the recipe book. In addition, you get a health topic presentation. The thyroid one was one of those, and we have some on adrenals, on leaky gut, on food allergies, on essential oils, you name it. There's about probably 30 of them in there in the library. So if you become a premium member, you get access to the whole library. And then there's also a monthly Q&A call where you just get on and we just chat. It's just like, you know, the questions that come in here, we just do questions and I help people through some of the problems. You can type them in advance or you could ask them on the phone. So it's just my way of, you know, extending what I do out to the community. And I love it, and I would invite you to become a member of it. We have a great time together. So thyroidresources.com or vitalhealthcommunity.com. Or if you're on the web, just click on those links. So thank you. I think next week we have a rather unique show. Is that the one we have that's the unique show?
Yeah,
let me look.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll talk about that.
A little bit of, yep. Go ahead.
Yes. So next Wednesday, is that next Wednesday? No,
yep.
That's on.
Yep. Just
I'm on the wrong Wednesday. Let me look. So next Wednesday we have a unique show, and that one is going to be on the health effects of, guess what, belly dancing. Belly dancing and how it helps your hormones. So I'm excited for you to come and join me for that. Same time, same station. And we also have next Thursday, we have a new one that's called Three Myths About Hormones That Can Make You Fat, Foggy, and Fatigued, Part 1. It's a three-part series. Starts next Thursday at 5 p.m. Central Time, and we're excited about that. You'll be getting information about how to register for that within the next couple of days. And then the other thing, what's that other one? Oh, yeah, so we're starting our Green Cleanse next Monday. So if you're feeling kind of like you need to jumpstart your energy and you need a little bit of a cleanse, our Green Cleanse starts on next Monday. So with that, I think we'll let everybody go and have a great evening. I, as usual, enjoy being here with you. So take care, have a great evening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye now.
Bye.